So again, welcome to this morning to St. Andrews. This is an interesting parable in the gospel, this parable of the rich manager that I'm quite sure Jesus or Luke means to be conceived in the hearer's mind with the parable of the prodigal son. They both especially use that word, squandering. You know, the son squandered his property in the far country, and the manager is squandering. But here's the sense I have of this parable. And you read the commentaries, and people, it's sort of interpretation like pin the tail on the donkey. People don't know what they're talking about. And here's why, I think. We're listening to this story from a gulf of 2,000 years. And my hunch is that when Jesus told these stories, they went kind of like this. There's a rabbi and a priest and a Lutheran pastor, and they all walk into the bar. You know? And so people are set up. They know what a manager means. They know what's expected of a manager. They know what to expect of the master. They know all of these things, and we don't know any of them. And so, as again, I sometimes say, these ancient stories, they're meant to be like jokes. And by that, I mean only this. That do you know what it's like to understand a joke? You get it. You get it in that instant. And the joke fails completely if you don't get it. And pity the poor comic that has to explain the joke. You know, D-O-A, you know. And that's often I have to explain the joke today, you know, because we don't get it. We don't, and there's even some suggestion, you know, when we hear that the manager was reducing the bills for his master's creditors, we hear only the master was getting cheated. Might not be that at all. There was something going on in the ancient world where there was a profit margin built into these debts, and the manager may well have been rescuing the master's compromised reputation. On one side, he has a manager that he can't control, and he's wasting his property. Now the manager acts generously to restore the standing of the master in the community. I tell you, we do not hear that. That's explaining the joke. So that's about as much time as I'm really going to spend on the parable per se. There are a couple of things, I think, really that bear even on our class that we've been doing, just begun this last week on Mandela and the power of forgiveness. A couple things. First, to note what the manager did. His strategy for improving his position in life and building relationships with other people was to forgive debts. And again, we're meant to hear the forgiving of debts as the broader gesture of forgiveness. I think the language is the same in "forgive us our debts as we forgive those who are indebted to us" in the Lord's Prayer. That language carries over to this, so that the forgiveness of debts is meant to suggest the broader act of forgiveness. And of that act, I want to hold up two things this morning. First, in a way that is often not appreciated, forgiveness, the act of forgiveness, is very self-interested. Just as this manager acted for himself in a self-interested manner, I think when Jesus is talking about forgiveness, he's really offering to us the only thing we can really do that will benefit us and act, that we can really act in our own self-interest. And how do I mean by that? Somebody has hurt you. You are angry with somebody. You're carrying around resentment. Who suffers in that? Who suffers in that? You're the one that's carrying this thing around. You are the one that is carrying this thing around. It is in your self-interest to figure out a way to let that go. And the way we've been talking about forgiveness in our class, our one time, and I'm sure if you've been around here for any length of time, it won't come as a surprise. The word forgiveness, I think, is confusing and overly complex. I am on a sort of a long-term campaign to replace the word forgiveness and understand it as an aspect of love. When you're confronted with the challenge of forgiving somebody, you are confronted with the challenge of figuring out how to love them again. That's all it is. How do you love? I mean, and it's a subspecies of love your enemies. Love those who have hurt you. Love those, in other words, forgive. But forgiving, often one of the complexities of forgiveness is that it seems always to be bound up in the past. That one way or another, we have to figure out this calculus of reordering the past. Do I forget it? Do I pretend it didn't happen? No. Second point about forgiveness. Just like the manager was thinking ahead, forgiveness, or the kind of love I'm trying to describe here, has relatively little to do with the past and almost everything to do with the future. It is, what kind of future going forward do you hold open for this person who has hurt you? Do you want to define them by what they did to you 10 years ago and just continue to see them in that way and insist that that's who they are? Or do you say, in your heart, whatever it is that troubles you, whatever it is that causes your unhappiness, and that you bring it on yourself and upon others, even me, I hope you find release from that, you say to your enemy. I hope you wake up. And as we talked about in our class, you do that with great humility because, you know, whatever you see in that other person, you know, you might be misinterpreting the situation. There may be many things in that situation that you're not aware of. But nonetheless, as a working hypothesis, you extend to the other the hope that they are not consigned forever to this place of darkness and fear and anger, whatever it is that's going on with them. You extend to the other the hope that they're not going to be stuck there forever, but that they wake up. And that allows you to be open to whatever positive and good and healthy and loving might come into the life of that other person. You hold open a future for them. So you do it, in a sense, for yourself, because it's miserable not to love, and our happiness is dependent on our hearts being open to love. You do it for yourself in the only real act of self-interest. And it's not so much about the past, it's really looking forward into the future and what kind of life that you will hold open for this person that may have harmed you. So that's part of what I want to talk about. This thing about you can't serve God and wealth at the same time. Whenever you hear stuff like that, remember that the vision of the whole sort of Jewish and Christian sensibility is one of a party. It's one of abundance, banqueting. That's sort of the image that says when things are made right, when things are as they should be, this is a banquet. And so when you say wealth, sometimes can suggest, we have to go around being sort of, you know, shrunken and ascetic and, you know, joyless and not at all. It's really, if you unpack what Jesus is talking about in God and money, as usual, it comes down to you can't serve God and yourself at the same time. You can't simultaneously seek to open your heart to God's reality, which is a shared reality. We all belong to it, and we all belong to one another in it. And everything that is here is meant for the common good. Well, that is one way of looking at things. And then another way of looking at things is, how much can I get for myself to define myself, to tell me who I am, and so that others know who I am in comparison with me? You know, how do I... You can't do that and simultaneously pursue God's reality. So I think it's always an issue of our attachment to and our preoccupation with my selfish needs. Finally, the one who is faithful in little things will be faithful in great. I'm not sure Jesus believed there was any such thing as a little thing. It may be there are no little things. And maybe what is being called into question here is certainly a tendency I can notice in myself, where I think there are times when it's kind of time off. And then there are important times. You know, I've got a class presentation to make. Oh, I better really focus on that because that's important. But, you know, maybe my talking with the teller at the bank isn't quite so important because I'm preoccupied. And Jesus really is saying, maybe it's all important. Maybe there are no little things. Maybe stop dividing the world into the things that you think are important and the places where you can kind of take some time off. Because almost inevitably, in those times of time off, we are walking past doorways into mystic sweet communion, and we just walk right by them, and we miss them. And to connect this idea with another image in our tradition, do you know how in Advent, those words come forth? The high places will be brought low, and the low places will be raised up, so that there is a level way for the Lord. That's kind of what I'm trying to talk about here. The attention itself is sort of moved away from there are high places and there are low places, there are important things and there are unimportant things. And kind of everything is as important as everything else. You're alert and you're present and you're receptive at every moment, not just the moments you think are important. And you've heard me tell this story before, but Gary Snyder, the poet, when he was living in Japan as an adjunct at the monastery, this Zen monastery, and he was he laughs at himself. He says, well, in my American efficiency, I would watch the monks work in the field, and I would think to myself, well, they could do that faster. They could do that better. They're not very, very efficient. Blah, 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 blah. So finally he tells one of the monks, he says, well, you know, if you did it this way and this way and this way and this way, you'd get done faster. And the monk goes, yeah, we'd get done faster. And that all that would mean is we'd have to go into the monastery sooner, and we'd have to sit down and meditate longer, and our legs would hurt more. And then he says, and besides, it's all one practice. It's all one practice. You know? It's all one practice. Not important things, little things, unimportant things. It's all one practice. The high places are brought down, the low places are raised up, and there is a level field for the Lord to stride upon. I'm going to quit right there. Amen.
Amen. Amen.